talk. Please welcome Vincent, who's going to tell us how to do monads in Python. Thank you.
Try again? Cool. So my name is Vincent, and I'm going to talk about monads in Python. So I'm a software engineer, and I have around 4 years of experience in Python. And it happens that I'm a big fan of functional programming. So monads have a pretty bad reputation in the world of programming, but I have some goals for this talk. It's to show that at its core, monad is a simple but powerful concept, and that monads can be leveraged in Python. So I have some warning to give. This talk will be more practically inclined than theoretically rigorous. So let's start with a motivating example. So let's say that we want to time some functions, that is to measure the time of execution of some functions. One way you can do it is to create a function decorator like this, which starts a timer before the execution of the function and ends the timer after the execution, and then returns the result and the time of execution. So let's have some functions, and let's use our new decorator. So one problem I have is how to chain those functions and get the total time of execution. So one obvious way to do it would be just to call the functions sequentially like this and unpack the results, the intermediary results, and the times of execution, and just sum the times. So there are some things which could be improved. First, we need to repeat the logic of unpacking the value and time at each step of the computation. And as programmers, we don't like repeating things. There's something else which we need to repeat. We need to repeat the summation. In this case, we need to sum twice. So let's introduce a function that I call bind, and which has as argument a tuple of some value and the time of execution, and a function f. So you can imagine that the time which is stored in the first argument is the time that has been computed and accumulated so far. So the bind function is just going to apply the function on the value which is stored on the left at the zero index of the tuple and compute the new time of execution and then return the result and the time we had before and the new time of execution. So with this bind function, which abstracts away the things which were repeated before, we can rewrite our example this way. And T contains the total time of execution. Okay. One thing which is less nice here is that we are nesting binds, and it can be a bit harder to read. So we can keep this same approach and use a more object-oriented approach instead. So instead of using plain tuples, let's define a class time value which just wraps a value and the time of execution. And let's define a bind method which does the same thing as before, but just returns a new time value object this way. So we have to update our previous decorator to take this into account, to take the new class into account. And we can arrive to this result, like write this, solve the problem this way. So it's the same as before, but we are chaining methods instead of nesting functions, which can arguably be easier to read. So what did we just do? We just invented a monad, the time value class. But we still don't know what is a monad. So let's try to get a sense of what it is. So monad is a general concept with time value being one instance of it. It can be seen as a design pattern which helps us compose functions with effects. And in this case, effects means like measuring your time of execution. So there is a useful analogy, which is to say that so you have a monad, and you have monadic values. So for instance, a plain value is an integer, and the monadic value is a plain value plus time of execution. So it can be useful to see a monadic value as a value plus a context. So what is it good for? So make composition of functions easier. So as we've seen, it made the composition of functions with time measurements easier than before. It avoids repeating computational patterns. And it's particularly useful when you have a pipeline of operations like we had before. So how to define a monad? Normally you have to define what is called the unit function or constructor. So its role is simply to take a plain value and transform it into a monadic value. Define a bind function which encodes the logic of applying your function to a monadic value. So I just mentioned here that theoretically speaking, you should make sure that unit and bind comply with some rules, some laws, but I'm not going to cover that here. And it's like those rules are quite intuitive. So if we go back to our time value example, so unit here is simply the constructor that we have. And bind is just the bind method that we've seen before. So let's go ahead with another example. So let's imagine that we have a code like this, which like we have a sequence of computations, and at each step of the computation we can have non-values. And in this case, we can find ourselves checking for nones very often. So for instance, let's say we are coding a social network and we have a user object and we want to get the friends of the first friend of this user. So in this code sample, we have to repeat the if-else none guards, which can be a bit cumbersome. So the question is, can we abstract this away with a monad? Anyway, yes, we can. We can with the so-called maybe monad. So the maybe monad is one of the most simple and common monads that you can encounter. So what is the idea behind it? So the idea is that you can have two kinds of values, either full or empty. Empty corresponds to the none value. If an empty value is encountered during a computation pipeline, just re-forward it. Don't even try to apply to bind more functions. And this allows us to not to check for none at every step. So I'm going to show you the codes, and hopefully this will be more clear. So let's try to define a maybe class. So it's simply going to be a wrapper around a value that we store in an attribute. And unit is simply the the constructor. Binds. So if self.value is none, we had, that means that we had at some point encountered some computation which returns the empty value. So we don't need to do anything more. We can just return it. On the other hand, if the maybe monad is full, we can proceed with applying the f function. So we apply it to the self.value attribute. So here there is a small distinction to make, depending whether on that, whether f returns a maybe value or whether it returns a plain value. So if it returns a maybe value, I just return the maybe value. If it returns a plain value, I wrap it around the unit constructor. So the reason I do this is to be able to ensure that we return maybes and that we will be able to chain more binds in the computation. So a sum note for our monad experts. Here I'm just conflating bind and map. And we can rewrite our previous example with the bind method this way. So we just take the initial value props and wrap it into the maybe constructor and apply successive binds on it. So what's nice here is that we can chain functions without non-guard, because the non check is done once and for all in the maybe monad code, in the bind function, in the bind method. Is there a way that we can be more concise? And yes, we can by using the dynamics of Python. So very quickly, because I think I'm lacking time. Oh, okay, cool. The idea is that instead of doing bind of lambda obj.method, what I really want to do is maybe unit.method. This could be more compact. So, and a natural idea that we can have here is to use the getAt magic method. I'm not going to get into the details here, but by defining getAt in some way in the maybe class, so there is some distinction to make if the field that you are trying to access is a function or not, but